Hello, and welcome to another edition of The Debate. I'm Kavit Afwayi. Iran's leader has spoken, and amongst other issues, he's made comments about the seemingly open relationship that is evolving between Saudi Arabia and Israel. He has said that Saudi Arabia getting close to Israel is a big stab in the back for all Muslims. Now, in this edition of The Debate, we'll discuss how this forging of ties benefits each other, one in which neither has a formal diplomatic relationship.
Condemnations continue pouring in days after Israeli and Saudi officials held meetings in the occupied Palestinian territories as part of their efforts to normalize ties. This time, leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, has deplored what is described as courtship between the two notorious regimes of the region.
اینی که دولت سعودی علناً با رژیم صهیونیستی بنا کنه به مغازله کردن و رفت آمد رو علنی بکنه این خنجری است بر پشت امت اسلامی شکی نیست.
Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has also slammed a visit by former Saudi general Anwar Ishqi to Jerusalem al-Quds. Hamas urged Riyadh against normalizing such visit that, quote, undermine the rights of Palestinians. The visit by Anwar Ishqi also caused uproar among Palestinian activists who set up a hashtag in Twitter which means normalizing ties with Israel is a treachery. Ishqi and his entourage held talks with Israeli officials in occupied Palestine last week. Among others, the ex-Saudi general who currently heads the Saudi Institute for Strategic Studies met Israel's Foreign Ministry Director General Dor Gold, as well as the Israeli regime's coordinator for activities in the occupied Palestinian territories, Yoav Mordechai. An Israeli lawmaker who met with Ishqi shed some light on his trip. He said the Saudis wanted to open up to Israel and want to get closer to Tel Aviv. He described the visit as a strategic step. Ishqi and Gold raised uproar first in June 2015 when they held a public meeting in Washington after holding private talks several times. Some observers believe that Saudi Arabia has an extensive military and commercial cooperation with Israel.
Military involvement with Saudi Arabia and Israel has been very close. They've helped exchange intelligence even as early as the mid-2000s with the war with Lebanon. Saudi Arabia is absolutely helping the Israelis in that war. You look at all the cooperation that goes on militarily and commercially, it's just a tremendously close relationship.
On the surface, Saudi Arabia and Israel have no diplomatic relations. However, there has been a rise in engagement between the two sides under the new Saudi rulers. Riyadh reportedly sees cooperation with Tel Aviv essential to containing what it considers as a perceived rise in Iran's influence in the region. The Israeli and Saudi regimes both support anti-Syria militants. After a series of meetings between Saudi and Israeli officials were exposed, it seems that they are becoming more open about their relationship. Saudi Arabia and Israel share common goals when it comes to Iran, Syria, and the resistance against Israel occupation policies. Riyadh and Tel Aviv don't have official relations, but the visit by General Ishqi and the big delegation accompanying him reflects an official tendency and desire in Saudi Arabia to normalize its ties with Israel, underlying the fact that Israel is no longer an official enemy of the kingdom, as it is increasingly ignoring the plight of Palestinians living under the Israeli occupation.
Well, our guest joining us for this edition of The Debate, editor at Veterans Today, Dr. Kevin Barrett, joins us from Madison. We have author and journalist Abdullah Hamouda, who joins us from London. Gentlemen, welcome. I'd like to first start with you, Abdullah Hamouda. They have been called by many as an open secret, relations between Israel and Saudi Arabia. The two sides have tried to hide it, but, reached a point where many have deducted that this is a relationship that has evolved. Iran's leader has come out and said that this is a big stab in the back to all Muslims, what Saudi Arabia is doing. How do you view this relationship, of which there is no formal, obviously, diplomatic relationship between the two?
Well, the problem is that it has been an open secret for some time that some Gulf countries are having a relationship with Israel. Some of them received Israeli politicians and held a meeting with them in their own countries, I mean the Gulf countries. Their media did not publish anything. The information came from the Israelis and the Americans. Obviously, there is a body of opinion, a huge body of opinion in Arab countries and in the Gulf itself, who do not like that. And they see this as really going behind the back of the Arab people. The problem is that some Arab countries, they feel that Israel could be a beneficial gateway to the United States if there is some tension in the alliance between them. They see that there is a common enemy to them, which, as they describe Iran in that respect. But obviously, there is a neglect and, let us say, at least downgrading of the appreciation of the Palestinian conflict. And this creates some kind of contradiction in the behavior of those countries. The problem also is that those countries appear to conduct their foreign policy on the basis of ad lib, ad hoc, exercise things as you go, while Israel adopts some kind of incremental, accumulative tactics within a strategy to penetrate and acquire gains and then capitalize on these gains for the following stage.
Well, Kevin Barrett, why don't you tell us, if you can, what is the give and take here? What does Israel gain? What does Saudi Arabia gain from this relationship?
Well, both of these countries have found themselves on the wrong side of history. They're both really remnants of the age of European imperialism and colonialism. The Ibn Saud regime was essentially created by the British as a puppet government. Indeed, they were largely empowered by the British even before they were governing Arabia, back when they were the marauding Wahhabi legions, the desert bandits who made their living preying on caravans to Mecca. And the Ibn Saud family, that unholy alliance between the Wahhabis and the Ibn Saud family, empowered by the British, goes back centuries. And in the 20th century, the Americans took over with the agreement between President Roosevelt and the King of Saudi Arabia in 1945. The deal ever since then has been that the Ibn Saud family gets to quote unquote rule, even though they have absolutely no capacity, no competence, no power. Their army and navy and air force have no ability to fly their own planes, run their own ships, run their own tanks, control their own weapons. They're a complete puppet regime of the Western occupiers. Likewise, Israel, the Zionist entity, the settler colonial entity occupying Palestine, is the last remaining European settler colony after all the others in French Algeria, British Rhodesia, British Southern Africa. They've all folded up and gone home, except for the Zionist occupiers. So both of these entities are illegitimate, purely fictitious creations of European imperialism and colonialism. And today, as the people of the region are empowered and people all over the world are empowered, as Europe loses its control of the world, it loses its supremacy both economically and technologically, and of course that means militarily, the Middle East is on the verge of beginning to free itself. The democratic currents in the Middle East, beginning with the Democratic Islamic Republic of Iran, but also the stirrings in the other parts of the Middle East represented by the co-opted Arab Spring, all of this is changing the whole direction of the region. And now the Israeli leadership and the Saudi leadership realizes the only way they can survive is to destabilize the region, to break it up according to the Oded Yanon plan for Balkanizing the region, to destroy these countries. As General Clark told us right after 9/11, the neocon plan, representing the plan of the Israelis and Saudis who did 9/11, who blew up the Trade Center together with the Israelis' American assets in order to destroy 7 countries in 5 years. And they've already destroyed all of those countries except for Iran. Mm. So that's the big picture. The Israelis and the Saudis plan to continue destroying the region together. Israeli miniature nuclear weapons have already been dropped on Yemen, and they're going to be doing a whole lot worse in Syria and Yemen and elsewhere in the region unless the people of the region and the people of the world wake up and stop them.
Well, let's see here. Abdullah Hamouda, our guest there, Dr. Barrett, covered a whole range of topics there. Let's see how they are going about this. The most recent being this visit that was held in Jerusalem, Al-Quds. It was a Saudi delegation that visited the occupied West Bank. And you had the retired Saudi General Anwar Eshqi and the ministry's director general, Dor Gold, who met. And this was stated to be a mission to promote a stalled Saudi-led 2002 peace initiative, which has to deal with Palestine. I mean, do the Saudis really care about Palestine, that this is how they're presenting their meeting?
I think part of the thinking behind this visit and this approach is to try from the inside rather than from the outside. But I don't think this approach will succeed, because Israel is having a great time right now, because if Arab countries have not been destroyed like what's going on in Syria and Libya, for example, they are preoccupied with internal issues and trying to maintain their state structure and keep peace. Busy with themselves, and attention given to the Palestinian issue is less than before. And in this respect, I feel that any approach to the Israelis right now, and I believe that this visit is the tip of an iceberg, because there has been news from the Israeli side and from the Americans about training programs, military training programs, and other associations in diplomatic, cultural, whatever, and visits, as exchange of visits as well. This is like a bonus for the Israelis. And I think attending to rebuilding Arab countries and trying to fortify those who are standing on their feet rather than feel fretting and run to Israel could be much better, unfortunately.
Well, Dr. Barrett, you know, these two have met prior at a Council of Foreign Relations in Washington about a year ago. And what was interesting about that, Dr. Barrett, during this meeting between this former Saudi general and Dor Gold, was that Dor Gold had a specialist with him that he presented there as one being familiar and being a specialist on Hezbollah. This would point to the fact that their focus would be Iran. Do you think that that is the most prominent feature of this relationship at this point, given the fact that there's a nuclear deal that was struck? And therefore, the two are still trying to spin their web to see how they can demote this nuclear deal?
Yes, absolutely. As we heard earlier, the Saudis actually provided intelligence to the Israelis in the war on Lebanon in 2006, when the Israelis were defeated by Hezbollah. And the Saudis and the Israelis, of course, were working together then, and they lost. And I think they will continue to lose, but now they're coming right into the out into the open about it, because the Saudis are paranoid about the rise of Iran, not so much just because of a nationalistic problem with Iran per se, or any kind of sectarianism, but because Iran represents the future of the region, which is it's an Islamic democratic republic rather than a kind of dictatorial authoritarian traditionalist monarchy, as in Saudi Arabia. And so the people of Iran have been empowered by their revolution. They've regained control over their resources, and they're heading for a brighter future. Iran makes more automobiles than any other country in the Middle East. The sanctions actually acted as a positive force in many respects. So Iran has been able to modernize and is growing and joining the BRICS alliance, and it represents the future of an empowered Middle East where the people of these countries take back their own destiny, take back control of their own resources, and create a system based on their own traditions, Islamic traditions, not colonial European traditions. So that's a threat to the Saudis. They're the comprador bourgeoisie in the classic sense, as well as a very, very old-fashioned, past, backward-looking monarchy and be propped up by Western power. So that's the really the bottom line here. And the Saudis are afraid of Hezbollah. The Israelis are afraid of Hezbollah. Hezbollah has been very effective in making alliances with different political forces in Lebanon and in the region. And this is, again, a model that threatens the neo-imperial, neo-colonial control of the region. And the Saudis, since that they depend on that Western backing, are trying to scramble to find a way to prop up this dying order. And they're doing it by working openly with the Israelis. The Israelis are still looking for a chance to get even with Hezbollah for what happened in the summer of 2006. And the Saudis apparently want to join that project.
Well, let's see what is going on in the region. Abdullah Amuda has to deal, in one sense, Iran between, in terms of Israel and Saudi Arabia. But when we talk about Iran that way, we're talking about the resistance. When we talk about the resistance, it involves a number of countries. And of course, it involves Hezbollah also. Let's look at Syria, case in point, where both Israel and Saudi Arabia are very much after having, obviously, Assad to relinquish power or to push Assad out of power. And they're going about it in such depth that it's engulfing the region. Even a future presidential candidate, Hillary Clinton, has said that if she were to become president, she will destroy, in a leaked email, she said she will destroy Syria for the security of Israel. Do you think that the U.S. is playing a major role in having Israel and Saudi Arabia come together?
I think, yes. The United States is like the link between Israel and any other party in the Middle East, and they exert pressure on all other parties to coerce them into entering into relationship with Israel. And also with the influence of the Zionist lobby in Washington, it has become like an escape from expressing themselves and doing the right homework to build as equitable relationship as possible with a superpower, which is not equitable anyway, that they can go through the Israeli Zionist lobby to make life easier for them. This is how things are conducted. With regard to Syria, unfortunately, some Gulf countries have come into some kind of exchanges, personal exchanges between leaders. And some countries in the Arab culture, unfortunately as well, when they trade insults, they see the relationship as personal and they conduct the policy of the state on the basis of these personal insults or feeling insulted. This has nothing to do with the statesmanship and how to conduct foreign policy and how to realize the interest of the country or the interest of sister Arab states and how to build solidarity. No, it is differences between individuals can be turned into differences between the states. And the Syrian situation is part of that in one way or another. So, yes, the United States is the linchpin between Israel and whoever in the region. And the personalization of the problem and the focusing on President Assad as an enemy can extend to the destruction of the whole of Syria, regardless of the human consequence and the strategic consequence. And also the destruction of Syria after the destruction of Iraq and the weakening of any other Arab state in the region is part of the Israeli strategy to keep winning as they go by the time and accumulate and capitalize and create a new reality which can be acceptable. And I think the leaking of the information about Gulf countries' relationship with Israel, and then the formal announcement or the press announcement from Israel and the United States is intended to desensitize the Arab public opinion so that it can become normal in time. It does not look acceptable right now, mm-hmm. but unfortunately, I think there is an element of desensitization. Right. And when the information comes from a party which is not seen as friendly to Arab countries in the Gulf and Saudi Arabia, they tend to dismiss it and consider it hostile. But the information is an information, and what has happened is on the record of everyone.
Well, we're running out of time, so I'm going to address the final question to you, Dr. Barrett. We're looking at the efforts by Israel and Saudi Arabia, as we've been talking, undermining Iran. How far do you think they're going to go, given the fact that we're looking at conflicts like Syria and the fact they have a new incoming president? Are we looking at them indefinitely pursuing their activities to undermine Iran in one form or another?
Well, yes, I think they're planning to undermine Iran. They've been seeking a major Middle Eastern war against Iran for many, many years now. General Clark's statement that the neoconservatives executed the 9/11 false flag operation in order to destroy seven countries in 5 years said that that list of seven countries ended with Iran, the most important one. So yes, Iran is very much still on their hit list. And the bottom line is that the Israelis need, or the hardliners in power now need or feel they need to finish the ethnic cleansing of Palestine. Alan Hart, the former BBC lead correspondent for the Middle East and back channel peace negotiator, has spoken about this. He's afraid that they're going to start a big Middle Eastern war and try to finish the ethnic cleansing by expelling and murdering the remaining Palestinians under the fog of war. And this has been the plan for many years. There were a number of false alarms, false flag operations headed off that were intended to start that war. And now, with the region in turmoil, with the Syria regime change operation in complete tatters, Turkey perhaps about to join with Iran in bringing peace to Syria, the Zionists and their Saudi partners are increasingly desperate. And the hardline faction represented by Lieberman and the other ethnic cleansers that wants this big war and to finish the ethnic cleansing, these people are capable of anything. They're capable of executing another false flag operation, even bigger than September 11th, 2001. There are rumors, according to the Veterans Today intelligence network, that the Israelis have these nuclear weapons planted in Western cities, that there is a planned, quote unquote, ISIS attack on Western cities. And if they were going to unleash this big Middle Eastern war and attempt the final ethnic cleansing of Palestine under the fog of war, this would probably be how they would start that war, through another very, very large-scale false flag operation. And they've been doing false flag operation after false flag operation at a smaller scale, and we just have to try to educate people so that they will not.
I unfortunately jump in. We're fresh out of time. Thank you very much for that. I do apologize. Scale. Editor of Veterans Today, Dr. Kevin Barrett there, and author and journalist Abdullah Hamouda was our other guest. Thanks so much for tuning in to another edition of The Debate. For Mikhail Vitaly and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, is goodbye.